I'm about to introduce you to a quite extraordinary woman. I don't think she'd be offended if I say that what she's been undertaking makes her into a sort of Forrest Gump of faith. Fascinating story, but let's set it up. Since medieval times, making a religious pyramid to either Rome, Jerusalem, or Santiago de Compostela was a deeply significant way of expressing one's faith in God. Now, pilgrims can be granted a plenary indulgence or forgiveness by the Catholic Church. That's the removal of all punishment for sins committed up to that point. Or, and this is what we're on about tonight, you can pay somebody else to carry your sins for you. Now, that was an idea which held great attraction for Elsa Piper, who loves to walk and completed a 780-kilometre pilgrimage across Spain. But when she came home to rejoin us here in Australia, she decided she had to attempt another one, this time much longer, this time carrying the sins of others. I only wish I'd known about this in time, because, boy, I would have loaded her down with mine. She undertook this in earnest, taking time each day to contemplate her sinners' list. And the result is a fascinating account of a physically and spiritually taxing journey. Elsa, actor, director, playwright. Oh, her play Small Mercies was co-winner of the Patrick White's Playwright Award in 2001. And her new book is called Sinning Across Spain. Elsa, welcome to our little wireless program.
Thanks, Philip. I'm extremely excited to be here.
Elsa, why did you decide to proffer yourself as a sort of spiritual beast of burden?
Well, I was researching something for a play because, in fact, I have another project coming up in July for Bell Shakespeare, which is an adaptation that I co-worked on with someone, of a play called Duchess of Malfi, which, as you would know, is full of sin and good stuff about power being monopolised. And in that, there are pilgrims, and we were looking at where the pilgrims belonged. And then I was also researching another project that I thought might have something, and I came across that piece of information that you just described about medieval sinners. And I couldn't put it down. I thought it was a great scam at first. I just thought, yeah, great, good. You know, nice one for the Catholics. That works. But for some reason, it really haunted me. And I think it goes back to something in childhood that my family used to joke about, which was that I would say whenever anyone was crying, don't cry, don't cry. Let me do the crying.
And, what a lovely child you were, Elsa.
Oh, hideous.
What was your own religious background? How were you indoctrinated?
Well, it's mixed when I think back on it because I actually grew up in the Gascoyne area of Western Australia on a sheep station when I was small, and I was surrounded by stories and songs and lullabies from the Aboriginal communities there. So, and my mother's beliefs were very mixed. When she was dying of cancer, she believed she was being sung to death. And so I had that somewhere in the background. Yeah. But I was sent to a Catholic school in Perth, and I loved the ritual, you know, I loved the colour and the movement and the ritual, but from a very early age.
All those smoking handbags and everything, nobody does it better, nobody.
No, that's exactly right. You know, the smell of frankincense and you're just straight back there, it's fantastic. But, you know, the thing that I always envied, and, you know, envy is one of the great sins, in fact, some say it's, you know, right up there as one of the worst, I envied people their faith. I always thought faith looked from the outside like this beautiful thing, you know, to believe. And so I think maybe when I came across that piece of information, a whole lot of things converged. There was that youthful wish to, or childlike wish to, take on other people's problems, coupled with all that love of ritual that had sort of suggested to me that it was possible to believe.
Now, this is the advertisement I missed. Otherwise, I would have loaded you up, my heavens. You would have been staggering across Spain. This is what your ad said. I will walk off your sins. Pilgrim seek sinners for mutually beneficial arrangement. Proven track record, tireless, result-oriented, reliable. Seven deadlies, a speciality. How many sinners got in touch?
Well, it was a very mixed response. I had a lot of people. The word sin has such a kick, you know. I mean, we use it in advertising, as you would know, and it's kind of got a nice, salacious, sort of slightly sexy feel.
Well, the advertising industry is based on manipulating the seven deadlies, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, actually. That's really, I mean, lust and greed and gluttony, it's good stuff. But lots of people responded, some of them in the book, some of the responses that were resistant to the idea. I've quoted little bits of those. But what really took my breath away was the fact that some people took it on maybe because they knew me, although that's not true. One of the most shocking sins that was confessed was from someone I've never met to this day. I know who she is, and I hope one day to meet her, but I was really struck by people's courage and by their preparedness to confess. And in fact, the ones who confessed the toughest stuff had really the biggest changes.
I've had 30, 40 years of this. People write to a newspaper columnist and tell all. Someone they'll never meet.
Mm.
There are hundreds of boxes of letters down in the National Library of this sort of correspondence. I was astonished by the need people had to confess to me, a total stranger who couldn't do anything to help them. At least you offered some sort of absolution. But you did draw the line, didn't you? You didn't want to get involved with too much mortal sinning.
No, absolutely not. There was a moment where I thought, well, what actually happens if someone confesses something to me that I am obliged to take to the police? That would be terrifying, mind you. I mean, it's the list of people who I sent out, the names I sent to. Well, actually, that's not true. Who knows what's in people's backstories? As I discovered, there were shocks in store, you know, with some of the things I was told. So, no,
well,
but I.
Well, one of your one of your sinners was troubled by the relationship. She felt like she was worming out of taking responsibility for her own sins by giving them to you. There's a certain sort of plausibility to that argument.
Absolutely, and there's something kind of admirable about that to me. But of course, you see, my great sin is pride. So of course, I have to be the strong one who can do and who won't allow anyone else to take on my stuff. And so I recognised a kindred spirit in that, and I think pride's a really interesting sin because from the outside it looks quite good, you know. Pride's the one where you get to say, no, no, I'll do it alone, you know, I'll be this hero. And I think I've got quite good mileage out of that over the years. But in fact, it's sort of, yeah, it's vanity sin, I think, pride.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little of that in that one.
Did you get any of my mob just wanting to sign up, any atheists?
Well, the atheists, I'm not sure if any atheists donated. That's a good question. But atheists certainly took me to task about what I was doing. And I was very fearful when I sent the letter out that people would actually think, oh, she's gone over to some nutter's cult. But the conversations at the time over the email were great. And, you know, they continue. As people now read the book, of course, the conversation I'm having now is, people tell me, husbands and wives sitting up in bed reading the book and saying, well, what sin would you have given and why? And my favourite story is actually, well, I'd have given her this one because that would have made her journey really ugly. It's like they now see the resonances of what they're carrying the sins did, and what they want to know is what would have happened to their sins.
Okay, so let me clarify something.
Hmm.
How seriously did you take this task you set yourself?
Oh,
I mean, at one level, you find it humorous, as indeed do I, but on another, you seem to be absolutely passionate about it.
Yeah, and look, the truth of it is I took it intensely seriously. I try not to take myself too seriously because that, to me, would
That's a sin. That's a sin.
That's a gross sin, yeah. And I do. I fall victim to it all too often, but I tried. With my task, I'm very task-oriented, that's true, and I'm a very, very responsible. I am an ex-head girl. You know, you've got to watch us. And I just decided that what I would do is, as you said earlier, read the list every day and walk with that in my heart. And it was heavy going. You know, people say, oh, walking 1,300 kilometres is hard. Much harder to walk with a sense of failure to your fellow man surrounding your psyche, you know, to live in that space and to examine your actions so rigorously every moment. We couldn't live like that all the time. I mean, I couldn't do it, but it was tough going. And there were days when I really, really didn't want to go on. But the thing about it was, and I really understood why the pilgrim had to be paid. I was paid to do a job. You know, people had paid me to carry their sins, and it didn't matter what the amount was. I was being paid. Well, you know, a good hard-working Sheila who believes in a work ethic. You get up and you walk with the scenes.
As I say, the Forrest Gump of faith. You're an extraordinary thing. Now, okay, how did you go about weighing the financial worth of absolving a sin? For example, the wish for vengeance, and there's a couple of those that I've read about, versus, well, just mild envy.
Well, I left that to the
sinners. What were the scales of sin?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because I left that to the sinners to decide what they felt a sin was worth. And for me, it was very interesting because I met every single one of the sins that they gave me along the way, except if I did meet sloth, it didn't hang around for long. It got kicked up the backside pretty quickly when sloth appeared. But in terms of what was the worst, you know, I started with judgments in my head about what I thought were bad things. But as it progressed, that changed. And as I met different ones of the sins along the way, that changed too. And I think the one that I thought, that'll never happen to me, was lust. Because I'm in a very, very happy marriage and I just hadn't imagined that was going to happen. Well, of course, that one bit me too. And
I hope the bite was metaphoric.
Indeed it was.
And if not, where?
No, definitely metaphoric. Okay. I don't think anyone could have ever lusted after me. You know, someone said the other day that the book sounds like it's salacious sinning across Spain. And when you think about a filthy, disgusting pilgrim who's been walking for 8 hours a day with 12 to 15 kilos on her back and is looking for a place to sleep, the thought that anyone could feel lustful towards you.
But there's something very Spanish. There's something very quixotic about this as well, isn't there? And the great Don managed to romanticise everything and everyone he came in touch with. There's a bit of that in you, I think.
There is a little of that in me. I mean, but I don't know if that's I think the thing is, in terms of faith, where I actually came to with the book, and the last thing I'd expected was to address my own set of beliefs, really, which is in one way it's a strand of the book. And where I came to was because of the Spanish, and I mean, listening to that conversation you were having earlier, I was walking through Spain when all that stuff was just starting to kick. And what I met at every turn was kindness. It didn't matter who fronted me. The Spanish were open in a way I've rarely met in my life. And I think you have to come to a place then where you believe in goodness as a force. And so,
I don't wish to sort of be overly sentimental, but I've found that everywhere on earth. You know, most people, most of the time, when they're not under unprecedented pressure, are pretty kind.
I think that's true. And, it is one of the things that, particularly when you walk, when you're face-to-face with people, when you're not in the bubble of a car or when you don't have the kind of trappings of our day-to-day clothing that we can hide behind and we can say to people, I am this kind of person. When you are actually someone who could be mistaken for a homeless person or a refugee or any other descriptor that looks like a lower class, if you want, or a suffering class, it's really interesting then to see how people face you. And what I would say about that is you have none of your protections of your day-to-day life. So you're more open, but they embrace you. And day-to-day, face-to-face, eye-to-eye on the road, kindness was everywhere, you know.
I'm having a lovely program tonight. This is Ailsa Piper, actor, director and author of Sinning Across Spain. Did you end the journey a different Ailsa than you were at the outset?
Yeah, I think undoubtedly I did. I think I would not probably assume that I could actually carry people's sins again. Not in the way, the blithe and slightly arrogant way that I did. I think the notion of taking on stuff for other people is fraught, and I think I learned a lot from that. But certainly the thing that I came to was to actually be able to claim a stance about what I believe in the world, which sounds really naff and simple when I put it into words. But, you know, I was so so taught in catechism classes to parrot things back without thinking them.
Yeah.
And for me, the world is experiential. Maybe that's partly why I became an actor or whatever. But we were taught in catechism that they would say to you, who is God? And you would say back, God is love. And it just hit me one day when I was walking that was just round the wrong way, that it's actually really simple, that love is God, and that actually what love is not this pap that we're sent. Pap, you know, love is getting up in the morning when you don't feel great and looking at the person who's next to you and thinking, well, I'll find the best in that person. And love is pulling on your stinking boots and thinking, yeah, and saying, I'll walk, you know. And people do it everywhere, but I think that's the simple thing of just actually saying, well, it doesn't have to be more than that. And that this place here, this extraordinary, beautiful world, is heaven enough for me. And it just put to rest a lot of those questions that I always felt I should have had an answer for, because I so envied and continued in a way to envy slightly those old ladies on their knees in church who seem to believe.
Well, I believe in a meaningless universe. You know, to me, it has no author, it has no destiny, it doesn't do anything, it just is in its magnificence and infinite complexity.
And but, isn't that enough? Shouldn't that be enough to believe?
Well, it's more than enough. It's, yes, it's more than enough. It really is. Yeah.
It's so wonderful and so miracle-laden, if you want to use that terminology.
Yeah. Did you do a job for your sinners? Have you talked to your sinners since you came back?
Yes, I have. I've had correspondence with most of them one way or another. And some of them had sort of amazing turnarounds in that time, which were nothing at all to do with me. I absolutely think they're to do with the power of owning up to another person and just squaring off. I mean, as you say, that pile of correspondence you have, maybe it's not even about what I could do by walking or you could do by answering letters. It's simply the power of looking or writing to someone and saying, I did this thing, I hate that I did it, I'm really sorry for it, and I want to be a person who's better by my moral compass, you know? And that's so beautiful. I think that's profoundly beautiful when someone is brave enough to own up to that sort of stuff.
And, of course, the pilgrimage is a great metaphor, because we're all on a sort of a pilgrimage, even if it's pretty pointless in the end.
Yeah.
And, of course, the road is one of the most powerful metaphors in literature and, latterly, of course, in cinema. You know,
absolutely,
the road movie, the road in the books. And it comes, I mean, on the road, the Kerouac thing was a strange sort of pilgrimage, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And, you know, the Spanish have this, the word is Camino, you know, that when we know it as the Camino de Santiago or whatever, but it actually means I walk, if it's the verb, or it's the word for the road. And the word Camino comes up all the time. You talk about it as a metaphor. For them, it's almost the most potent descriptor of their life. They talk about it all the time. And it made me very aware of language and the way we use it on news reports and things. And they, yes, it's always there for them, that idea that we're on a journey.
The other great metaphor, of course, is the river, isn't it? That's the river and the road. I like the fact that many people who do the walk that you did aren't alone, especially not women. And they all said to you, via con Dios, go with God.
And, you know, that's, no matter what you believe, it's like that's the best wish I can give you. And that was what used to move me about the way they'd say it. Well, for me, it would probably be, you know, may the road rise to meet you, if you want to use something from Ireland, or, you know, I hope the sun shines on you. But for them, it was the most potent wish they could make for me was that I would go with God.
Have any of the churches been in touch with you, Alison? No, I'm not joking, quite seriously. Did any theologians wanted to talk to you about what you did?
No, none. In fact, the only theologian I've had contact with was the one person I met on the first 400 kilometres of the road. And the only person I bumped into was a theologian. And that was the point at which I thought, oh dear, maybe there is a God. And I've actually...
Well, I didn't. Tell me about this encounter.
Well, he was a gentleman who was making the walk, I think, for reasons that maybe weren't clear to him originally, because the actual road I walked is very untravelled. It's not like the famous Camino Frances, where there are hundreds of thousands of pilgrims. And in 400 kilometres, he was the only other walker I met. And so I think it was a mistake for him, because he really wanted company and I really didn't. But then when I realised he was a theologian, I kind of thought, I've got to engage. And I kept asking him questions about faith, about God, and explaining what was happening, which was difficult because, of course, in Spanish, which was the shared language we had, the word sin actually means without. So at one
I'm
point...
I'm sorry, run that past me again.
If you say in Spanish, sin pecados, it means without sins. So sin is the translation of without. So at one point we had this fantastic conversation where I was trying to explain to him that I was carrying sins. And he kept saying, sin, sin. And it actually, it was the most difficult, irritating moment because I realised that he couldn't hear the word sin, this theologian.
Mm.
He couldn't understand it, so I had to act out what sins were for him so that he could understand that the English word
That's something I would have liked to have seen.
Well, it was fairly hilarious, actually, yeah, and, you know,
I'd
no
like to see
of
you acting out the seven deadly sins, boy. Suddenly I wish this was a television program, and I don't even like television. Oh dear.
But yes, he was funny, poor man. He sort of had a crisis of faith as a result of the conversations with me, and I felt very responsible to and for
woman.
Him.
You are a dangerous woman.
I am.
I also know from that your writing that you got into a sort of a trance-like state a bit, didn't you? Because while you were walking, particularly on the first pilgrimage, you felt as if you were watching yourself from above and as if you were flying.
Yes, it's one of those things that you hesitate sometimes to confess to because it does sound a bit hippy-trippy, but it is literally what happens to me when I walk long distances alone, which is my favourite way to walk.
Mm-hmm.
I walk the Great Dividing Trail in Victoria, which is absolutely beautiful, and you can do 30, 40-kilometre stretches on that. And it's an odd experience, but it genuinely is the way it happens for me. It feels like I lift out of my body and I don't feel the body at all. Now, it's probably just endorphins. I'm sure it happens to distance athletes.
Ailsa, we've got to wind it up, but this was a delightful chat. Ailsa Piper's book, Sinning Across Spain, published by Victory Books. And on Easter Friday, being Easter Friday, we're resurrecting classic LNL for one final appearance. And it's on the traditions of pilgrimages across cultures. Look, that's a wrap. Where I've got to thank the team. When things are erratic, when I'm crook, it makes their workload all the greater. And I'm deeply grateful to you, Luke Peirce, Christine Short, Gal Basario, Anne Arnold, and Mudita Dias. And I'll see you on our next.